Well, good morning and welcome.
And there's something so special about this Christmas season, about celebrating Jesus. It's gotten more special as I have children because, you know, at my age, sometimes I forget the wonder of Christmas. And to see the wonder of Christmas and of Jesus all over again in a young child's eyes is pretty amazing. And those of you that are parents, small children, you know exactly what I'm talking about. About 4 months ago, Doug asked me to share here today, and I knew almost right away what I wanted to talk about, but what I didn't know is I didn't know that the events since then would confirm over and over again to me that the message that I want to share here this morning, I really should be sitting in the audience and talking to myself, because this message is to me, and it's my prayer that you can be encouraged and inspired along with me. You know, I want to talk this morning about what it takes to be a hero. We all want to be one, if you're honest anyway. The world is full of people that want to be a hero. But so few of us actually live a life that is worthy of being called a hero. You know, everyone in this room, down to the young children, has a hero, or maybe multiple heroes. And I believe everyone in this room, you also are a hero in someone's life. And when I'm talking about a hero, I'm talking about someone you admire, someone you look up to. That's the definition I'm going to use this morning when I'm talking about a hero. Galen, last Sunday, your message, he laid the groundwork for what I'm going to share today. He talked from 2 Timothy chapter 2. So if you want the preface to my message, just go back and listen to last Sunday's message, and then it'll all make sense. You know, we've all walked this path of life this past week, and it's taken us through different things. And Galen, you already mentioned about the loss of a good friend. And I didn't know Larry. The only way I knew Larry is a few weeks ago, I asked my nephew who his favorite teacher was at school, and he said, Mr. Wrestler. And I didn't know who Mr. Wrestler was. And I didn't really think about it until I heard that Larry died, that started connecting the dots. But Galen, you said one thing this morning that really hit me between the eyeballs. You mentioned how Larry was one of your youth group friends, and you did a lot of things with him. I have a few friends like that. I can't imagine what you must be going through. But I know Jesus. And there's something about the name of Jesus, and there's something about singing about him and praising him that brings peace into your life. And I can't always explain it, but I just know it's there. And I know those of you that are Christians, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And we live in a world that so desperately needs Jesus. And sometimes I wonder, am I doing enough? Am I doing enough to actually bring Jesus to the people that I interact with? So I mentioned about a hero. And I mentioned how that every one of us is a hero to someone. We probably don't even know it. And the question I want you to think about is, are you living a life that's worthy of being called a hero? Can you say, like Paul said, follow me like I follow Jesus? You know, that's a mouthful when you really think about it. So I'd like to share with you one of my heroes. And this is a man I've never met. I wish I would have met him. I didn't know until after he died that he lived in Hershey, and I could have met him. He died a couple years ago. But this is a man that I first learned to know back back 2001, 2002. You know, for those of you that were old enough to remember, after 9/11, patriotism was at a fever pitch in our country. And I, like so many other Christians, kind of got swept up in it. And the man I'm going to talk about, his name is Richard. And he was born in 1918. And when World War II came along, he realized that if he doesn't join the army, he's going to get drafted. And he was determined to be the best. And he wanted to be in the company of the best. So he joined the army, and soon after that, he found out that they were starting the airborne infantry, and so he signed up for that. Because the army was starting a new concept with airborne infantry at that time, and for the first time, they were going to train men as a unit, and then send them out in the battlefield in that same intact unit. Up until that point, they were trained in the army, and then they just kind of went wherever. And so they would land on the wherever they would land, and they wouldn't have any friends and that type of thing. So Richard went to Georgia, and he trained at Camp Tocoya. When he got to Camp Tocoya, he saw a mountain. The camp was based at a mountain. And it's a 3-mile hike up to the top of the mountain. And I drove it here a number of years ago. I drove up to the top of that mountain. And it's quite a drive. And as a young man, he thought, and in his peers, they talked about that, you know, probably by the end of training, we're going to run to the top of that mountain. And little did they know that that would be almost a daily occurrence. And in fact, they learned to run to the top of that mountain in 20 minutes. 3 miles in 20 minutes. If they didn't, they were thrown out of the infantry, the airborne infantry, back to the army, and they did not want to go there. Their company commander took the definition of mean to a whole new level. And for the slightest of infractions, he would send them running up to the mountain in 20 minutes. Richard was one of the officers in the company. And one of the things that he did, and it soon caught on, and when one man would have an infraction and would be sent to the top of the mountain running, the rest would join, and they would run together. Richard didn't have to do this. There was no one telling him he had to do this. No one telling him that he had to put himself through that grueling exercise of running to the top of the mountain in 20 minutes. And he took, by doing that, he said, if I don't get to the top of the mountain in 20 minutes, then I'm going to be kicked out. So why would he do that? Richard and his men, they trained together for 2 years. For 2 years they spent training. And they grew together as a unit. And then on D-Day, when they jumped behind Eutaw Beach, they were assigned to take Brecourt Manor. And that was a mansion that had quite a number of artillery pieces, and they were shooting down on Eutaw Beach. So they went and they took three of those guns with a ratio of 15 to 1. And the methods they used that day are still taught today in West Point. That's part of the military doctrine if you go to West Point. One of Richard's favorite sayings, and he lived it again and again, was "Follow me." And he would, later on, as he became company commander and even advanced up to the ranks of the army, he would lead by example. So my question today is, what made him a hero? Because if I give you his full name and tell you a little bit more about him, many of you would probably know about him. But what made Richard a hero? It wasn't the battles he fought. But he was a hero because of how he cared for his men. Yes, maybe in our eyes or in the eyes of our country, he's a hero because of the battles he fought. But I'm talking about the men that he was actually with. And Richard would say, especially in his retirement years, he would say that, "I wasn't a hero, I just fought in the company of heroes." And today it feels like I have that same opportunity here in this church to say that I fight in the company of heroes. Richard and his band of brothers, they learn the power of teamwork. Like, I believe very few, if any of us, really know what it's like, teamwork and loyalty, and what it's like to be in a company of men, or women, but company of men that would die for each other in one instant and never think twice about it. So what made Richard a hero? I'd like to think that he was a hero because of two things. He was a role model and he was a mentor. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about that. And I'm using the definition of a role model today as someone who inspires us to be like them. So, going back to the training camp, when Richard was in training camp, he inspired his men because he took the punishment with them. He didn't just sit back and laugh at them and say, "Well, that was your fault, so you're just going to go and deal with it. And if you get thrown out of the army, so what?" But he cared about them. He picked them up as they were broken and beaten down, and he ran with them. And when you think about running to a mountain, up a mountain 3 miles in 20 minutes, that's quite a feat. But after a couple weeks, they'd have to do that fully armored. And so some of these men were in the machine gun crew, and so they would have to take their machine gun with them as they're running up, a 20, 30-pound gun running up the mountain. And Richard was right there with them. You know, we can do this role model business without Jesus. We don't need Jesus to be a role model. But there's something about when I have Jesus in my life and when I bring Jesus to people, that being a role model gets so much easier and it's so much more doable. And not only that, then I'm giving life to someone else. You know, I can be a good man and I can do everything just right, but if I'm not actually giving life to you, and if I'm not actually life-giving, I'll get to the end of my life, and yeah, you might think well of me, but am I really someone that has impacted you? And I want to share a story of one of my role models. And this man is living, he's not dead, but he really inspires me. You know, we're all here on the home front, And I've said this already myself, and I've heard other people say it many times. We talk about, well, we're just here at home, and we're going to be missionaries here at home. And we're going to be missionaries through our business and through school and all that kind of stuff. And I believe many of you are. But I'll be really honest with you, there's many times where I say that and then turn it right around and stay in my own little comfortable spot and don't do anything and just use it as an excuse. You know, I feel better because I said it. Well, the man I'm going to talk about, he's actually living it out in real life. I'm going to call him John, just to hide his identity just a little bit. He's not here, just so you know. But in the business that I am involved in, I work with farmers every day, and many of them are Christian. And I've heard from them many times about how that we're going to use our farm as our mission field. And I've heard it so often, it just kind of goes in one ear and back out the other, because they say it one minute and then the next minute they're acting or saying things that are very unchristlike. And so I've heard this again and again. But this man by the name of John, he's actually said this too for many years, that I've done business with him. But something happened the last couple years that really kind of, like, showed to me that he really means business about his farm being his mission field. So 3.5 years ago, John is not a coffee drinker. He'd get along with Elvin really well. But he stopped at Turkey Hill for coffee. He'll tell you he doesn't know why he did it that morning, but he did. He walked into Turkey Hill, and there he met a farm manager of a local estate. Long story short, this estate was in the process of changing hands. They kicked the previous tenant off that had been on the estate for 40 years. And he was looking for someone to take care of the farm. Now, for those of you that are farmers, this will make a little bit of sense to you, or know a little bit about farming. But when we're talking a local estate, we're talking 1,100 acres of land to farm. So this is not just, you know, a little 50-acre patch that we're going to work on. This is a big deal. On this estate, there's probably 5 or 6 different guys that work there on a regular basis. But one of the things that John has said again and again in the last 3.5 years is none of these men are Christian, and they need Jesus so bad. It's absolutely appalling sometimes when you see how they operate and the fear they live in. I sometimes leave there just shaking my head, like, how can men live this kind of life? But one thing that John has said again and again is, doesn't matter what happens with this whole business endeavor, I want these men to learn to know Jesus. Well, that's a noble goal. Until you get to this year, this summer, all of a sudden the farm manager, we realize that he's taken to drinking again. And when we're talking drinking, we're talking about every day, about 2 o'clock, he starts drinking. And he's on the job. If myself or John would tell the owner of this estate what's going on, he'd lose his job in a heartbeat. So he's not allowed to be doing this. All his employees know it. It's common knowledge. But then what will happen is once he's getting really loose and upset about something, he'll pick up the phone and he'll call. And he'll call me or he'll call John or someone else. And then for 30 minutes, I'll hear about how bad John is and how he's ready to throw him off the farm and lock the gates. And sometimes it seems like he's really serious. And I've talked to John about this, and John says, yeah, it seems very serious. But he keeps coming back to said, I'm okay with losing this if only he finds Jesus. And he told me again this about 10 days ago. I'm okay with losing this farm if only they find Jesus. Now, for those of you that aren't farmers, to put this in a little bit more perspective, is let's say you had a customer that was 75% of your business, and he was an ungodly man, and your goal was that he would learn to know Jesus, and yet he's threatening with walking away with 75% of your business. Would you still want him to see Jesus? Now, that's a role model to me. Someone that can put business and all that kind of stuff ahead of, I want this man to see Jesus. And I guess the call for me this morning and the call for each one of you is, how are you living your life? Are you living your life in a way that you really are serious about other people seeing Jesus? Or is it something that you say today here in church, when you're with all your church friends, but then tomorrow when you're out in the business world, it becomes a different story. So going back to this whole hero business, I believe that to be a hero, to actually impact people and to be able to take the calling of being a hero honorably, you need to be a role model. And going back to Richard, he was a role model. He lived his life in a way that he was a role model. But I'd like to take it one step further. and talk a little bit about being a mentor. And the definition I'm using for a mentor this morning is to help uncover and unleash our true potential. That's a mentor in my book. A mentor is someone who helps me uncover and unleash my true potential. And when you think about it, is that how you're living your life? Are you living your life in a way that you're actually helping people do that? I'd like to give you a couple examples of what people that I think have been mentored and been mentored well. And the one example is Denzel Washington. He's a movie star. He's been in 52 movies as a lead actor. Very famous, but he's also a professing Christian. And for what I would know about him, I believe he would be genuine. But 42 years ago, Denzel was in college, and he had a 1.7 grade point average. So he was flunking out of college. He was on his way out. He had given up hope. He was done with life. He wasn't sure where he was going to go. He was just going to go somewhere. He had lost his rudder and had lost his direction. And he went into his mom's beauty parlor and was in there. I guess he was, I don't know what he was doing, talking to her or whatever. But anyway, there was a lady in there getting her hair done. And their eyes kept catching his eye. You know how it is if you look at someone sometimes and then all of a sudden you realize they're looking at you and you kind of look down. And Denzel said they did this for a couple of times. And all of a sudden this woman says, "Get me a pen and paper." And he's like, "Oh boy, what happened now?" This woman said, "I have a prophecy." And she wanted to write out a prophecy for Denzel. And she said, "Denzel, you're going to travel the world and reach millions of people." And that was it. And Denzel was flunking out of college. He was giving up. He was ready to, I don't know what was going to happen. But this woman was connected to God enough and in tune with things enough that she was willing to take the time to speak into Denzel's life. And because of that, Denzel is the man he is today. So think about it. When we talk about being a mentor, maybe that seems scary. Maybe it seems like I need to spend a bunch of time with you, or you need to spend a bunch of time with someone else. But it could just be just little moments in time where you actually just speak into someone's life. Another example of a mentor, and I didn't ask Jay if I could share this, but he's not here this morning. But Jay's brother, JD, he was a quiet man. For those of you that knew him, he never said a whole lot. But after he died, you know, the stories start coming out like it is when anyone dies, about you learn about the person. But JD's daughter shared this story, and it really touched me, and I want to share it with you. But it's a very practical example of how you can be and how I can be a mentor in someone's life. So I don't know, maybe 6 months ago or so, one evening, one of JD's daughters was leaving the house to go somewhere, and her car needed gas, and she wasn't going to be able to get to the local gas station in time before she runs out of gas. And so she asked her dad if he could get her some gas, and he said, "Sure, you'll get her some gas." So he got the gas can out of the garage and filled it up with gas, or emptied the gas can out. And on the way back to the house, he said, "Oh, by the way, you usually tip people that fill your car up with gas." And so she threw a dollar bill out of the window. And a couple days later, that dollar bill showed up. I'm not sure where it showed up, but maybe a book or something. And up until he died here a couple weeks ago, they were trading this dollar bill back and forth. Now, I believe that's a very practical but very real way of actually connecting with someone, actually being a mentor, actually helping them uncover and unleash their true potential. Because think about it. If JD wouldn't have done that, and if his daughter wouldn't have been brave enough to share that story at her dad's funeral, I wouldn't be sharing here today. We wouldn't know about it. And I know already that it's touched a number of people's lives when you think about how it takes such a little thing to actually impact people. So think about it. We interact with people on a regular basis all the time. And I guess the question I'm asking myself here this morning is there someone that is ready and just waiting for me to fully engage, to say, okay, I'm ready to be a role model. I'm ready to be a mentor. I'm ready to actually invest in someone's life. Because remember what I said at the beginning? I said that we all want to be heroes. And I really believe that. And I'll be honest with you, I want to be a hero too. But to be a hero, it takes work. It's not just, you don't just wake up some morning and say, oh, I'm a hero. But it actually takes, you know, being a role model, being a mentor. Sometimes people that talk a lot, or that it's easy for them to talk, have a harder time with this whole role model or mentor business than those of us that, not those of us, because I'm not very quiet, but those that are quiet. And I want to encourage those of you that are quiet, you have as much a platform to share as those of us that can talk all the time. You know, one of my best friends is a quiet man. And I learned many years ago when Daryl speaks to listen. And if he did not listen, it was my loss. And Daryl, today I value your friendship and input in my life more than ever before. And I want to see our church, I want to be a part of a church, and I see it happening that people actually care for each other. And, you know, more than just how'd your week go and, you know, what's happening on the surface, but actually take time to dig in and be real with each other. And that's one thing I love so much about our church here. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but if you remember at the beginning, I said this message is more for myself than for anyone else, because I feel a need in my own life to be and do this a lot more. If you want to put that slide up. So in closing, I want you to think about this whole hero and role model and mentor business. And I gave you my definitions, but I want you to think about it as you go home here this today and this coming week. What are you doing? You know, we've been created to be all three. God created us that way. And I believe when I embrace being a role model, when I embrace being a mentor, that's then and only then am I worthy to be called a hero. And I heard just a little bit of it this morning already, but I'm sure that for Larry Ressler and those of you that know him well, you're thinking the exact same things. Like, that man was a role model and he was a mentor. And because of that, he's a hero in many people's lives. So remember Richard Winters, Major Richard Winters. He became a true hero only after he was a role model and a mentor. Not before, but after. Because his original company commander was mean. He was not a role model. He was not a mentor. But he was a leader, but he still was not a mentor and he was not a role model. But Richard was. Think about John, who says he's okay with losing most of his business just for the sake of a couple guys' salvation. That's easier said than done. And it is my prayer that I will never forget the life lessons of these two men that I shared, because they are teaching me, and especially John is, because I have a relationship with him on a regular basis, but they're teaching me what life is all about.